Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing great.
All right.
I wasn't talking to you guys. I was talking to our listeners.
Oh.
So how's it going?
No one answers.
They don't. Nobody cares.
Chirp, chirp.
You guys are just doing okay, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't have any sound effects this week, so no chirp, chirp. Yeah, I know.
Nick will do all the sound effects.
So the reason we didn't have a podcast last week
is technical difficulties.
My computer died.
It's true.
It's a sad story. So we don't have our end theme song anymore.
We can hum it.
We can. Oh, I guess this isn't the right time to hum it.
Not yet.
Anyway, my name's Kevin.
Good night, everybody.
I'm Jared.
Nick.
Yep, Nick. so this is our 31st episode of the Big Planet Comics podcast.
Ooh.
We are rolling right along. We're doing lots of podcasts, you guys.
We're trucking.
We keep trucking. Oh, we're going to have to pay money for that.
That's all right.
So I should say you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can go to our Facebook page, which is
Facebook.com/Big Planet Comics.
That's right, Jared. Mm-hmm. Ding, ding, ding. I'm making my own sound effects tonight. And you can follow us on Twitter at Big Planet Comics.
Yep.
Yeah. So what should we do? Let's go over a little more of these polls we've been going over.
All right.
You guys want to do that?
Sure.
I wish I had a sound effect. I got no sound effects.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. That was a pretty good sound effect. Jared is our Foley artist.
It sounded like something falling.
What are you doing over there, Jared?
I was going to do something exciting.
He's messing with this board game called Quarriers that I have that we played the other day. That was pretty fun.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about this poll. All right. So you guys voted, and let's go through. The first section was best writer or the first award.
Mm. Best rider? Like Ghost Rider?
Yeah, like Ghost Rider or Rider from Jersey Shore. Any friend of Snooki's is a friend of mine.
Sean Ryder from the Happy Mondays.
Did you guys hear that Snooki's pregnant?
What?
Yep.
Wow.
It's Gianni's baby. Big Planet Comics podcast for all of your Jersey Shore news.
Everyone just turned off the podcast.
All right. So anyway, so coming in at 0 votes for best writer.
Yes.
Nick Spencer.
What?
He stinks.
Oh,
well, yeah, all these guys are good, but
these
still
are the top 10.
These are the top 10.
But when you got to pick the top one,
you got to pick the top one. And this was a landslide.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It was definitely a landslide. But I'm going to say,
for Nick Spencer,
with only one vote, this one makes me sad.
Yeah.
Rick Remender.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you would think.
Rats.
Yeah. Maybe just because he really had the one really good thing.
And, well, also his book certainly did well on its own in the great series category.
Yeah, he's been dominating the competition. That's why I'm surprised he only got one vote. No, also,
the sympathy votes. Like, people are like, I'm going to vote for the comic over here, but not for him as a writer.
Indeed. Poor Rick Remender. Also, with only one vote, Jeff Lemire.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Should we be saying what these people wrote? People know. If they voted.
If you don't know, go to our webpage at
If
Facebook.
You don't know, you've never listened to our podcast before.
Also true.
Yeah. And also, with only one vote, Jonathan Hickman.
Ooh.
I know, this is crazy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that said Jonathan Layman, and I was like, how did he get on this list? He's not bad, but he's like number 12, you know?
The Hickster.
All right, so with two votes, Ed Brubaker.
Yep.
Which is also...
Yeah, oof.
It's, you know... I guess there's a clear winner here, so...
I think Fatale will be moving him up for 2012, but understandable.
I think that's probably fair. Also, with two votes... I'm looking at this list here. Brian Azzarello.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is fine. He did definitely write some good stuff this
year,
though.
He did.
That Flashpoint Batman thing was the only good Flashpoint thing.
Yeah. It really was.
No, the Frankenstein thing was cool, too.
Yeah.
Written by another one of our top 10 writers.
Strange that.
Also, with two votes, Jason Aaron.
All right.
To make Nick cry. Next year, he might be a little higher, too, because Wolverine and the X-Men will be more in full effect at that point.
Scalp might be wrapped up, right?
Will Scalp finish up this year?
Probably, yeah.
Whoa, creepy.
And Boys is going to finish up this year, too.
Yeah. Well, maybe.
Nick's going to have no comics to read. Just every Marvel comic. Yeah. Let's see. Did anybody else get two votes here? Nope. Then we jump up to 6 votes for Robert Kirkman.
What?
He's like a show in because he's got some loved series.
That's all Patrick.
Also true.
Patrick voted 6 times. Patrick and his friends. And then I don't think I'm missing anything here.
What do you got?
We jump up to 16 votes.
Whoa.
What?
For Scott Snyder.
Nice.
Yeah,
the clear winner.
Smashing it out of the park.
Is that the one we picked too?
I can't remember. It's been so long. Him.
We picked. Yeah, we picked Scott Snyder. Nice. We know what's up with the people. And there was one right in Stan Sakai. Jared, was that you?
It wasn't, surprisingly, but I heartily agree with it.
Stan Sakai, was that you? Have you been listening to this podcast? You voted for yourself, buddy?
No. Could have. He's too nice to vote for himself.
No, Stan Sakai is awesome. I have not read any of Usagi from this year, so.
No, me neither.
Still good.
I believe it. I believe it. All right, so then moving on to best ongoing series with 0 votes, Morning Glories.
Boo.
Well, it's written by that Nick Spencer. He got 0 votes in the other category.
He stinks. He stinks.
The love is fading.
Also with 0 votes, Walking Dead.
Which
I guess means Patrick did not vote in this category.
I believe. Is there a competition in this category for the Robert Kirkman vote?
No.
Nope.
Ooh, that's weird then.
All right, so then with...
Wait, is it Infinite on this list?
Oh, Infinite. Maybe we'll talk about Infinite in a minute. No. With 1 vote, Scalped.
All right, yeah, nice.
Nick,
did I vote for it?
I'm sure you did. Probably. I don't know. I'm not actually sure. Also with 1 vote, Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I've been surprised. I thought Ultimate Spider-Man was going to do a lot better in all of these categories.
Well, I've been telling some people about it, and people are like, oh, is it good? So I think a lot of people just haven't got around to reading it yet.
Oh, is it good? Come on, people.
That's what it is.
I don't know what that means. I guess I could see just being like, oh, I don't know, it's Spider-Man. Also, with 1 vote, Gladstone School for World Conquerors.
So good.
That was like a sympathy thing that I got in our top 10 anyway.
It's so good. So good.
I know. It is good. It is good. Oh, no, there is Robert Kirkman competition here.
I thought so.
With 2 votes, we've got Invincible.
Yep.
Nice.
And there's Patrick.
There's Patrick twice. Patrick and his twin brother. Mustache Patrick. Also with 2 votes, Sweet Tooth.
Nice.
Which is my favorite comic about a character from Twisted Metal. How's Sweet Tooth been? I'm way behind on Sweet Tooth.
It's so good.
I believe you.
It's been great. There's been lots of twists and turns, and there was a cool 3-issue arc by Matt Kent. Pretty sweet.
Is it $3.99? I won't buy a comic if it's $3.99.
$2.99, bro.
Drawing the line at $2.99, except for Justice League and Action Comics.
And Men of War.
And, Men of War. Drawing the line at issue number 8.
Exactly.
And then with 3 votes, we got Fantastic Four /FF. So really, that's 1.5 votes apiece.
Yep.
Nice.
Both well-deserved.
Also, with 3 votes, we got The Sixth Gun.
Oh, so good.
Nice. Which is half a vote for each gun.
Nice.
And then, am I missing anything here? Nope. And then winning at 9 votes on Kenny X-Force.
There you go. Remember, coming from behind.
That's what we picked, too. But actually, this is pretty amazing. So we had a few write-ins. One was Justice League, which I can see Justice League's been a pretty entertaining series. One was for 20th Century Boys.
Yeah. See, that was one of the problems with doing this is, like, best new series or whatever. Is like, there's so many good things, like, manga that is a series that we just didn't really think of.
Yeah, well, it's also the best stuff we read.
Yeah, I mean, none of us have read the 20th Century Boys, at least not the ones that have come out this year.
Not last year's ones.
Yeah, so, and then, but right in with 7 votes.
Yep.
Bam-tan. Batman.
Oh, the Bam-tan.
Wait, Batman?
Yeah.
Scott Snyder Batman.
I guess by the end of the year, but it only had like 3 issues. So we could,
but we threw other stuff on there. It had like 2 issues.
Well, that's why we didn't put it in. We left it up to these jabronis to write it in. Yeah. But 7 write-ins.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
I would have actually picked Detective over
that's like more than Donald Duck got for president.
Oh.
Shucky Ducky.
Shucky Ducky.
Yeah, but I'm impressed with that. And then, Jared, you've got the best graphic novel list over there. Is that correct?
I believe this is the
Should
last.
Should I stall, or is this going to work this time?
No, this is the last category. So
Stall.
So doing this, again, in the reverse order, we'll just do the...
It's more dramatic that way.
The three, I'm going to do this a little faster. The three that did not get any votes are The Forming, Book 1, Pinocchio.
Sorry, I didn't even vote for
Nick. Oh, and also Prison Pit 3.
I don't think I voted in this category.
You didn't. I noticed. Oh, okay. I was just checking.
Well, then with 1 vote, Pinocchio.
Oh, yeah. Actually, 1 vote, The Cabbie Book 1.
Nice. That wasn't me.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
That's weird. Did somebody else read that book?
Yeah.
Maybe I voted for that.
Sweet.
Also, some good ones with 2 votes. Old City Blues.
Nice. It's a great book.
Yeah.
I feel like Old City Blues is one of the ones that was on our list where people just like, nobody's read it really. Yeah. And definitely check out Old City Blues.
Kevin voted for it.
Yep. I love that book. I love the art. I love the story.
Beautiful package.
I love the comic.
Yeah, you love the comic.
I'm going to start writing for the Comics Journal, you guys.
I don't need to read the comic now. You've described it so well.
Art is good.
It's true.
Writing is good, too.
These colors are pretty.
It's black.
What did the kids say in the Fox News thing?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, did we talk about Yeah, we talked about the Fox News thing.
It's got pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to interview this guy and be like, where you get your ideas from? Anyway, so what do you got, Jared?
Well, another one with two votes, Infinite Kung Fu.
Infinite Kung Fu is great.
Nice. Another one that I believe not a lot of people have read and is astounding.
Nobody's it's a big book. People still need to finish reading probably what won our post, our thing. But anyway, let's keep going because I'm not saying words.
Three votes, A Tale of Sand or Tale
nice.
Of Sands.
Tale of Sands, great. I think it would have gotten more votes if we weren't sold out of it so much.
Yeah, if anybody could have gotten a hold of it.
I think we're sold out of it again.
Already? Yep. We just got them today.
I know.
Oh my God. It's terrible.
Idiots, quit buying that book.
Also tied for three votes, Green River Killer.
That's nice. A great one.
Yep. I think we should be quite happy the fact that it's got four votes because we really push this on people. Troop 142.
Nice.
Yeah. Mike Dawson, you're awesome.
Yeah. It rhymes. He's awesome.
It does. Awesome Dawson. Yep.
Sort of rhymes.
Yeah, yeah. It's good enough for me.
And so a lot of people have not voted in this category yet, so you can still get on Facebook if you want and readjust these numbers if you want. But for the winning with 9 votes,
yeah,
Habibi, of
landslide,
course.
Of course, Habibi. Yep.
What? I can't believe it.
Habibi.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
I'm going for the Washington Wizards announcer thing. Well, that's good. So that was everything.
Hope so.
You guys can keep on voting.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about it anymore, but you can keep voting.
We will if there's something crazy happens, like 100 votes for, I don't know.
Batman. 100 more write-ins.
I will refuse to talk about that, but yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, maybe we should... Should we do a little bit of news?
Sure.
Yeah, whatever. What in God's name was that? Is that a whale mating call?
Yeah, that was that...
That was a beached whale.
What's that movie, The
help?
Whale Rider, where the little kid rides on whales?
Oh, yeah.
Free Willy with Michael Madsen.
Wow.
No, that was supposed to be the, like... The Super Friends thing.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't sound anything like
wow.
it.
Wow. No, it didn't.
Like, sure.
It's getting worse.
It's just getting worse.
Almost.
All right. Anyway, so what did I say we were going to do? Some news.
News, please.
All right. So let's talk about this whole Watchmen thing.
All right.
Who watches what?
Who watches?
Someone gets killed, and he finds out that he used to be a superhero.
Spoiler.
What?
Isn't that what the Watchmen's about?
Watchmen was
a
comic.
I never read it. It's a murder mystery.
Starring the Blue Beetle.
Right.
From 1972.
Batman.
Written by Alan Grant?
Yeah.
Anyway.
The Question. Who else is in it?
All these other guys. Anyway, let's talk about this Watchmen thing. Jared, tell people the real thing that's happening.
All right. The real thing that has been rumored for months that I had not paid any attention to, so I did not know about this, is that they are doing not one... Not two, but three prequels to Watchmen.
Aren't they doing seven?
Oh, you're right. They're actually doing seven prequels to Watchmen.
Seven, buddy.
And they're going to do it in the same format as the...
Watchmen?
No, the Grant Morrison. God, Seven Soldiers.
Oh.
Where they're doing seven miniseries that all vaguely tie together, each one focusing on a character or team. And so these will slowly come out, you know, overlapping in their schedule. So basically you'll get one Watchmen prequel issue a week of these seven series for like over half a year.
And all written by Alan Moore, of course.
Actually, Gibbons is going to co-write some of them.
Is he really?
No.
Yeah, okay. Oh.
One of them, I believe, is drawn, though, by the colorist of the original Watchmen.
I think they're colored by the colorist.
Well, he's also drawing one.
Oh.
Or at least that's what I saw somewhere. Yeah.
So the thing about this is everybody's going to go, oh, geez.
What are you talking about? Everyone's like, yeah, Watchmen's back.
But it's one of them's written and drawn by Darwin Cook.
That's awesome.
He don't know if he's doing
Yeah, he's
both.
Drawn. He's drawn.
But someone else might be writing it.
Oh, whatever.
Whatever. He's Cook's involved.
Yeah. And Brian Azzarello.
Yep.
And then the names start to drop off a little bit from there. The artists are good, though.
The artists are all really good.
It's like Andy Kubert.
Maybe both Kubert brothers.
Both Kubert. No, I think it's Andy Kubert and Joe Kubert.
Whoa.
Papa Kubert.
Big Papa.
Jay Lee.
That's pretty good.
Doing one, yeah. But then some of the writers, like Len Wein, is writing something.
And he might be writing two things.
Oh, yeah.
Yay. I'm sure he is. And then what they're going to do is right before it comes out, they're going to announce that Rob Liefeld is going to be writing four of the Watchmen books.
I wish.
Yeah. Did we talk about that? So anyway, that's the Watchmen thing. I don't know. There's not too much to say about it.
Yep.
They're just, each one's concentrating on a different character, right?
And yep.
Blah, 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 blah.
We'll read them all.
Alan Moore came out and he said... He's like, I don't want money. I just want this to not happen. I don't see people writing prequels and sequels to Moby Dick.
Which I think is the call to arms by Alan Moore that Moby Dick needs a sequel.
Yeah.
In comics.
Yeah. And I was like, well, but Alan Moore wrote a sequel to Dracula.
And to King Solomon's Mines.
That's definitely true. Is that Alan Quatermain's from Kinsellman's
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea?
Yep. So I don't know what he's talking
and
about.
War of the Worlds.
And obviously he hasn't seen Moby Dick 2038 or whatever it's called. That's a real movie.
You're right.
Yeah. Today I was like, well, no, he wrote a sequel to Moby Dick. It's League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Yep. And then I was like, oh, that's just in the movie.
Yeah.
Because Ishmael's in the movie, right?
But I don't think he's in the comic.
I feel like he's in the comic.
He's in the comic. He just has the tattoo on his back of an arrow. And at some point, they don't even say it until much later on. He's like, oh, Ishmael, come help me with this.
I'm like, what?
I feel like he's actually in the newer ones.
I think he's more in the new ones, too.
Yeah.
So Alan Moore, quit being such a boob.
Yeah. Maybe he's being sarcastic. He's like,
he
winking.
Was not being sarcastic. Aww. Also, don't compare yourself to Herman Melville. Don't compare your work to Moby Dick. You can if other people do that, you'd be like, yeah.
That's true.
But don't do it yourself.
Yeah.
You're a jerk. I don't see a sequel to the Bible. Yeah, it's called the New Testament, buddy.
Should have bought some more dragon.
And it was written by God.
He needs to go. He should have taken that money, man. How's he going to afford all those dragon rings for his fingers?
Yeah,
man?
How's he going to afford thumb rings and beard conditioner?
Big Blank Comics Podcast, the only comic show that will trash Alan Moore.
I'm sure rent's really cheap in Northampton, though.
Probably true.
It is like a dead industrial town, so.
Yep.
Anyway, Alan Moore writes great comics.
When he writes
or
comics.
He did. The last two leagues weren't so fantastic.
Yeah.
We still love him, though.
I do.
I love Watchmen.
It's a love-hate thing.
But of all the people to bring back, The Colorist.
Yeah.
I mean, Jared was like, oh, more Pink Mars.
Yep. That'll be amazing.
Anyway, so that's the news.
That is some news.
I guess there's the other stuff. There's the whole Kirkman-Liefeld thing, which is pretty interesting.
Debacle.
But that's kind of hard to explain without showing art. But basically, Kirkman and Liefeld had a disagreement about
a
the inker
out.
On the fifth issue of Infinite.
The Infinite.
The Infinite. And then the pencils and the inks came to light, and it showed that Rob Liefeld drew the pages with his feet. And then another guy came in and made him look better than anything Rob Liefeld has ever drawn.
Yep.
And Rob Liefeld was like, this is the best work of my career.
It's true. It was.
Yep. So.
If his name had been on it.
Yeah. So that was a funny thing. If you can find those pages, they're on Bleeding Cool somewhere.
Yes. They are worth comparing and going, you get paid to do this?
Indeed. Is that all of our news?
That's it.
So
we have some Big Planet news.
Do we?
We have events.
We do have events. So, let's talk about those events, shall we?
This is a new segment to the podcast because we're getting crazy with the events in our 26th anniversary year.
Yeah, we love events.
It's 26th anniversary. It's like the cover to the last issue of Venom. It was like the 24th anniversary of Venom. I was like, 24? Who chose that number?
Geez. Yeah, just wait till next year. God,
yeah.
Quit jumping the gun, you guys. All right, so first up in March, early March, we've got a Magic Bullet 4 release party.
Yep.
And Magic Bullet 4 features, it's a free newspaper with comics by a lot of local people. Yeah, yep. Including a comic by me. With the amazing artist Mike Short.
Yep.
A comic really? By Nick over here.
Mm-hmm. By the amazing art of Nick over there.
By the amazing art of Nick. He's still finishing it, even though the deadline was today.
And almost done.
A bunch of great comics by other people. And keep your eye out for our Big Planet Comics ad that's going to be on the back page.
Yep.
Which is drawn by many awesome comics people. Brooke Allen, Coleman Engel, Lamar Abrams, and Mark Burrier.
Yep.
And they really brought it.
They did. They are astounding.
They bring it. They're like The Rock. They're the Rock of comics altogether.
The Rocks.
I smell what they're doing.
Yeah, they're four fast, four furious. And then in April, we've got April 14th, we've got Justin Jordan and Trad Moore, who you may know as the creators of The Strange Talent of Luther Strode.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which I was saying today, this is like the equivalent of having, to me, like Robert Kirkman and Ryan Otley right when Invincible started or something like that. Because I feel like these guys are just going to keep doing amazing stuff together. Yeah. And on May 5th, which is Free Comic Book Day, we've got Jeremy Whitley, the writer of Princeless.
Which we talked about and love.
Yeah, we love Princeless. And so come out to that and get some free comic books and get, you know, that stuff. And then on July 28th, we've got Matt Dembiski, who is the writer and artist for Shock.
Shock,
which is like Mayan for shark or something.
Yep.
And that's his book about sharks that is coming
great
out from Oni
sharks.
Press. Yeah and it's pretty awesome. So yeah, come out for that stuff,
and hopefully we'll have more stuff coming up soon.
Yeah, so that's that. What have you guys been up to?
Stuff.
I've had a cold. Miserable.
Jared. Oh, right. Tell us more about this cold, Jared. Was it a head cold?
It was, but that means I got to read a lot of books, and I watched some movies, and I played Skyrim.
Yeah, that's good. Skyrim is the game that gets played. What books did you read? Anything really interesting?
Yes, I read 4 more Parker novels by Richard Stark.
Nice.
And I read a book about the Crusades called, oh boy, Jerusalem, which was a historical adventure thing. It was pretty good.
Sounds good.
Yep. Nice.
I read, I just finished a book called Ready Player One by Ernest Cline, which it was awesome. It was like this kind of crazy futuristic adventure thing that takes place in like a World of Warcraft type world. That's
sold.
Pretty amazing. It's like somewhere between the Matrix and World of Warcraft. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I've just been drawing.
Nick's been drawing a lot. Yeah. His page for Magic Bullet has 70 panels, approximately.
Something like that.
Yeah. So Magic Bullet, as Kevin said, is like newspaper sized. And a lot of people are like, cool, I get to draw huge panels. But no, Nick's like, look how much space I have to draw lots of little panels.
Which was a terrible idea in retrospect.
But it's awesome.
Taking forever.
That's true.
Yeah. He makes like Chris Ware look like, you know, his page is a map of a Costco or something. And I just redesigned the Big Planet Comics webpage.
Ah, yes. More news.
That was very exciting as well.
Is it going on too long?
Great.
What's going on too long?
The news.
Well, we're just talking about what we've been doing, man.
Yeah.
We're just having a little chat.
I'm tired.
You've just been drawn.
Yeah.
You stay up till 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Drawn
it.
And then Nick and I did another podcast. We're moonlighting. We did a radio show last night.
A live radio show
playing video game music.
Yep.
And Jared chatted in.
Yeah, I was just admiring in the secret headquarters down here, you have the magnet beam world plan for domination on the wall, and it looks like something out of a James Bond movie. It's terrifying.
It's true. There's sharks like, with laser beams on their heads.
And there's like arrows and like kill him now and like by December, this must happen.
Yeah, so we've talked about it before, but Nick and I both work on a video game webpage called Magnet Beam. And yeah, you should check it out.
Yes, sir.
It's cool. Yeah, yeah. And you can listen to our podcast last night. You can hear some Zelda music.
It was good. I really liked a lot of the stuff you played.
Yeah, we tried to play a little more eclectic stuff. It's not just like the Super Mario Brothers theme for a half hour. All right, so that's it. Let's get in some viewer mail. Who wants to do a little? Let's hear a little sound effect for viewer mail from somebody else. All right, so nice. That there we go. So let's do a little. Yeah, that was really good. That was a nice little thing. Like, why was mine the Price is Right music? All right, so our first message, letter,
communique
is from Christian, who says, if you guys could invite any comic creator to be interviewed in the podcast, who would you pick?
Al Moore.
Who'd you prom Marvel DC? What the hell does it say?
I think that I was looking at.
Okay. Let's say, who would you pick from Marvel and DC? That's the first question.
From Marvel and DC, Alan Moore.
Yeah, I think Alan Moore likes to be considered as being from DC, right? Yeah. He's like, you know, DC Comics is Alan Moore. No. Who would you guys want to have
current
on
current writers and artists?
Yeah, I think so.
Your writers,
not like Steve Ditko or Jack Kirby or something.
Stanley.
That would be. Well, I guess Stanley still writes like Backstreet Boys comics or whatever,
but not for Marvel or DC.
I don't know. I'd like to have Jason Aaron on here. I think I talked to Jason Aaron. We
cool.
both did. Nick yeah. and I both talked to Jason Aaron for a little while. At Baltimore Comic Con. Yeah. He seemed like a cool guy.
Yeah, I talked to him, too. He was awesome.
Yeah. So I think Jason Aaron's cool. He does good stuff.
Robert like Kirkman, he'd be pretty cool.
Kirkman'd be good.
He's funny.
Well, that moves on to from independent / self-publishers. Who would you like to have on?
Kirkman.
I'd like to get Mike Dawson on the show.
Yeah.
If
only he had any interest in podcasts.
It's true, and that'll feed into one of the other questions on here. But he does a podcast, and he seems like a personable guy, and I love his comics.
Ink Panthers, right?
Ink Panthers, indeed. And then, here we go, from all of comics history.
You almost got to do Kirby, but...
I would think, Jared, you would have gone straight to Hergé.
Oh, whoa. You just blew my mind. But then you've also got stuff like Winsor McCay. Like, there's so many awesome people you can get on
here. I'd like to interview Rudolf Topher.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, honestly, like, if you could have him on now and be like, look at all the crazy comics out. And
what's the name of the dude that did I Shall Destroy All Civilized Planets.
Oh, Fletcher Hanks.
Wow.
That'd be sweet.
He'd be like, what am I doing here?
Where am I?
Where am I? What year is it? It'd be like when Captain America wakes. Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to have Carl Barks on the show.
Oh my god, yeah,
that'd be pretty good. I think. Yeah. So I don't know. We love comics.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man would be great. Yeah, Spider-Man would be awesome.
No way. If we're doing Spider-Man, it's just jump to Galactus.
We have Galactus on the show. He wrote that comic, The Fantastic Four.
He did.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think those are good choices, right?
It's a pretty good start.
Yeah.
Morbius.
Hooray!
Yeah.
The living vampire.
Yeah, we could have Mobius.
Mobius would be good.
Yeah, that Morbius.
How good's your French, Jared? Would you be able to translate?
He speaks pretty good English.
Does he?
So I could embarrass myself.
Let's get him on. He's still alive.
What am I doing here? This is garbage.
He's like 80. Did he have a pinup in that Madman book that came out this week?
No, I don't know.
I don't think he might have. But anyway, so those are the people.
Yep, the peeps.
All right, so moving on to another question. This is from Rob. He says, I heard that The Boys was originally a Wildstorm title.
Correct.
Which is true. Yeah, basically Wildstorm was, before they got shut down, a subsidiary of DC, and DC said, hey, these characters, The Boys, and this comic...
Too messed up.
It's too messed up. It's making our superheroes look like
jerks. They're trashing, you know, stand-ins for the Justice League in every issue.
Which gets to his question, if it hadn't gone to Dynamite and was then included as part of the New 52, who would win when The Boys took on the Justice League?
Whoa. I believe when The Boys finishes up, we will know the end of that.
I think that's true, and I think that we will find that The Boys will destroy the Justice League's lives.
Well, if it was in the DC Universe, the Justice League would probably win.
It's true.
They'd hug it out.
Yeah, so
they would team up against like Darkseid or something like that.
Yeah, he says how would it go down, which I think we're answering right now.
Yeah, they would fight and then they would team up to fight Darkseid.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, they wouldn't really fight. They'd be like, "Oh, it's okay, guys."
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he says, "Thanks for a totally awesome podcast."
Wow.
Yeah.
Another person who likes
it. And then it just says Rob, but I'm going to say it says love Rob.
Yeah. You just sense it.
Yeah, I can sense that he loves us. And then we have another question also from Christian.
Yes.
Yeah, because
Christian Dior?
Christian, yeah. It doesn't say that here, but I think we can assume
probably
it's Christian Dior. And there are two questions from him because one was sent last week and then one he sent this week. It says, guys, obviously no podcast could possibly take your place.
True.
That's sweet. I'm going to pretend that this one says love Christian. But for those sad, cold, lonely weeks when I don't get to listen to the Big Planet Comics podcast, what other podcast or casts do you guys suggest listening to?
None of them.
What we just mentioned.
Ink Panthers,
which is Mike Dawson, who does Troop 142, and Alex Robinson from Box Office Poison and Tricked and
Too Cool to Be Forgotten,
which is being made into a movie.
Just got announced. Got picked up for cool. films.
But the fun thing about that is they interview comics people, but they hardly ever talk about comics.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and that's kind of nice.
That's pretty cool.
As far as other comics podcasts, we've sort of searched some out, we listen to House to Astonish a little bit, which is a British.
Yeah, that one's pretty fun.
That one's pretty funny. Sometimes they do a thing on there
it's half amazing.
Called the official Marvel handbook of the official Marvel handbook.
That's true.
Where they like talk about old Marvel characters and how they could be brought back and stuff. And that's pretty funny.
I enjoy iFanboy from time to time.
Yeah. And they do one called Word Balloon as well, where they interview creators, which is sometimes great when the sound quality is good.
Yeah. That's
sometimes they call in from like wind tunnels. Yeah.
artillery just have ranges.
Like two Dixie cups with a string connected together. I think that's what Skype is.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I listen to a lot of video game podcasts. So if anybody out there likes video games, there's one called the Giant Bombcast, which is great. It's just guys talking about video games, and they're really funny. I'd say it's like the video game equivalent of the Big Planet Comics podcast.
Yeah.
And then I listen to one called 8-4 Play, which is a bunch of Americans in Japan who localize video games, just talking about like the Japanese video game scene. And that's pretty entertaining as well.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I got one, Not Your Usual Bollocks, which is another British one. It's all about like small label or unsigned music, and he just plays music and talks about them, and they're awesome. So it's a lot of stuff that you haven't heard of before and stuff that like 3 months from now will be on a major label or on the radio.
And there's another one called Comedy Bang Bang, which I like a lot, which is just comedians just being interviewed and like doing funny improv stuff, and that's pretty great.
That's pretty sweet.
And there's also Magna Beam Live with me and Nick playing video game music live every Tuesday night at 10:30.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's that stuff.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, we like to get these questions from you guys as we talk about all the time.
Yep.
So send us questions.
Yeah, we like hearing from new folks.
At podcast@bigplanetcomics.com. I want to thank Christian and Rob for sending in questions this week.
And Christian.
It says here, love Christian
Dior
times two.
Yeah.
And then it says best friends forever. It doesn't say that. Jessica did not send in a question this week.
She had 2 weeks. What's up?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Is she okay?
I'll ask her to send in a question.
Please do.
She sends in good questions, I feel like.
She really does.
Yeah, and then we end up talking about, like, yogurt and stuff. That's true. All right, so since we missed last week, we've got a lot of reviews to do this week.
Yeah, so if you've never listened to the podcast, we do reviews occasionally.
We do reviews.
After talking for 3 hours.
We don't just talk about Jersey Shore for 30 minutes. good times. I like these times.
Good times.
When one of us dies, probably Jared.
Probably.
We're going to be sad. And then we're going to go back and listen to these podcasts, and we're going to be like, oh, it's probably better that he's dead because he sounds miserable.
Yeah. It's true.
All right, you guys want to get into some reviews?
Woo.
Let's do it.
I don't know what that was.
We love comics. They're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews. That's right, song. It is time for reviews.
Hey, we got one of the songs.
We did. Yeah, that song survived. So, we have a lot of stuff to talk about this week.
Yeah. Sorry, folks.
Yeah. No, it's all right. Let's get right into it. The first thing is ADD, Adolescent Demo Division Hardcover by Douglas Rushkoff and Goran Suzuka.
It was good stuff. Next.
Yeah, that was good. Moving on.
Check.
So, Douglas Rushkoff wrote Testament.
The comic.
He writes lots of nonfiction books as well, I think. And Goran Suzuka is known for Why the Last Man, I would say, probably the most.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he drew a lot of Why the Last Man.
Yeah. Did he?
Oh, yeah. Well, Pia Guerra and Goran Suzuka. And Goran Suzuka drew a lot of Punisher as well.
Somewhat.
Maybe I'm getting this totally wrong. Anyway, he draws comics.
No,
so
he did. I think he did a lot of the Ennis Punisher.
Did he? I don't believe it.
It's true. Anyway, Adolescent Demo Division.
So this one was kind of weird. Like, I found that Rushkoff's comics, especially in Testament, like, he has so many crazy good ideas, but sometimes he has trouble carrying them off. So this one definitely is a little more polished than his try in Testament. But basically, in the future, a bunch of kids who might have been grown in some sort of cloning vat or whatever, since their birth, have been trained to become the world's best video gamers and, like, athletes or whatever. So
they're like video game testers or something like that.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's weird because he also mixes in that these people are now become like celebrities because of it. And they're always on TV and like people come to conventions to watch them and people watch them play the games online and stuff. And
yeah. And then people they're kind of celebrities, but then they're also like very weird because they're very closed off from the rest of the world. So
yeah,
they have their own way of talking language. And
yeah.
Stuff.
It's like a weird language that you kind of have to pick up as you're going along, kind of like Spaceman or like Clockwork Orange. But yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of Testament.
No.
It was just really weird. And the art in Testament I didn't think was so great. But was that G. Willow Wilson? Not G. Willow Wilson. Anyway.
Well, whatever.
Someone else.
Yeah, whatever. That's not the comic we're talking about.
We're gonna blow through these comic reviews.
But this sort of turns into kind of like a THX 1138-ish thing where, you know, there are like a couple people that are, you know, fighting against the status quo a little bit and wondering why things are the way they are. And it gets pretty intense and murdery and lots of crazy stuff happens. And I thought it was great.
Yeah, and there's like really weird kind of powery kind of things going on. Like the one guy starts seeing like past these marketing ploys and like sees like real things behind. Like They Live style. Like he sees like an ad and then he sees like somebody having sex and it's like, he's like, what the hell?
Yeah, you can see like the sort of subliminal messages that are inside of all these things.
Yeah, a lot of levels of reality in this. Like, what are you actually seeing? And is he seeing beyond the game or is he going crazy? And there's some interesting stuff.
But as sort of nutty and complicated as the story is, I felt like the storytelling was really clear and it was a really easy to read book.
Yes.
I mean, all things considered.
Yeah, I was never confused.
I will agree with that until the end, which was a little
confusing. The end's a little vague and confusing,
right,
but
vague.
It's kind
I'll
of intentional.
But, in a way where I think it's meant to be.
Sure.
I mean, I thought that this was great. I love a good standalone sci-fi book, and I thought that that's exactly what this was.
Yes. Yep. Pick it up.
So that was Adolescent Demo Division. All right, so moving on. Alpha Girl number 1 by Jeff Roening and Jean-Paul Bonjour and Robert Love. Jared was saying that you're not allowed to have the name Jean-Paul Bonjour.
Not if you're French.
Yeah, it's
unless you're a comedian.
It's racist against French people. I told him that I had a friend named Jean-Luc Baguette, though. So
Wait, you really did?
No, I don't really.
Oh, dang.
Friend Miguel Ola?
Yeah.
Was he in a punk band?
Yeah, no, Jean-Luc Baguette. He directed Breadless. Anyway, Nick, you want to tell people what Alpha Girl was about?
What was it about? Zombies.
Zombies. Basically, all you need to say. Sold.
There's not a lot to this issue. It's pretty short and I feel like it wasn't a very good first issue. I kind of like the ideas, and it's kind of funny. Basically, this girl is living in this zombie-infested future, and she, almost the entire issue is like her explaining how it happened.
Yeah, it's
she's like
so
this cosmetic company did this and that, and it's really funny. And like, but I think my main problem with it is that you don't really get a sense of what the book is about. Because it's you know, it's about a zombie apocalypse, and you don't really see the main character very much. She's in like three panels or something.
Yeah, it's a little weird because you feel like it's her story at the beginning, and then it jumps into this other story that she's kind of telling that seems like she has maybe way too much information about.
Yeah.
True. And yeah, at the beginning, you know that there's this zombie apocalypse, and then it switches to these perfume makers or whatever.
Well, it switches to her childhood, and you see a little bit of that first.
Yeah, true. And then it switches to these perfume makers, and then at the end, you're like, oh, this book is about a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
Yep.
Basically, they start working on pheromones, and it turns people into zombies.
Yeah. In a really funny way.
Yeah, no, it is funny. It kind of reminds me of old Rick Remender stuff a little bit.
Yeah.
But the art wasn't too fantastic. Yeah. I felt like the cover was pretty cool, but the interior art was just a little...
I don't think it was bad. It was just kind of...
No, it wasn't bad. It was just not great.
Almost good.
Yeah, almost good. Exactly.
Almost good.
Yeah, and it's just we've seen so many comics about zombies at this point.
It's true.
And I don't know that this one brought anything new to the table, which you kind of have to do if you're going to write a zombie book at this point.
Because there have certainly been a lot of zombie comics that have done that, and this one was just kind of standard.
Yeah, so. It was all right. I'm definitely going to read the second issue.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, like we say with many first issues, you know, it's you know, it's like the pilot episode of a TV show, you know.
Yeah.
It's not always going to be the best episode.
Right.
Hardly ever will be. All right, so moving on to The Astonishing Spider-Man and Wolverine Softcover by Jason Aaron and Adam Kubert. This was a limited series in Marvel's very short-lived Astonishing line.
Astonishing X-Men.
Yeah, but Astonishing X-Men was already going, and then they tried to do Astonishing Thor, Astonishing Wolverine and Spider-Man. I think there was another one. Was there an Astonishing Captain America?
No, it was Astonishing X-Men, Xenogenesis or whatever.
Yeah,
that's kind of running at the same time as the other Astonishing X-Men.
But, I actually thought this was really good. I think it suffered a little bit when it was coming out because it was only
slow.
Every month and a half or two months.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so great. It's just like basically about... Spider-Man and Wolverine getting thrown back in time and
together.
Yeah. And just fighting crazy time traveling villains and ending up tangled up with Mojo. There's Dr. Doom shows up in the future where he's a giant planet and Wolverine shoots him with like a Phoenix gun, and it's crazy ideas, but it's always like at the core of it, it's just like about Wolverine and Spider-Man and their relationship and their like how they differ and
how they love each other.
Yeah, well, they hate each other.
Hate
each other / love each other, but it's great. It's one of the best miniseries I think of the last like couple years.
Really? Because it didn't make it on our list.
Yeah, it's funny because I didn't actually even think about it, but I don't even know when it came out. I feel like it's been so long. I feel like it started in like 2009 or something.
It might have.
But I like that it definitely embraces the craziness of Marvel,
right?
Like who's the bad guy with the eyeball for a head? He's in it.
Yeah, guy.
And anything with Mojo in it's pretty nuts.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you want a good standalone fun story
with it's got a really big heart. It's really, I thought the emotional stuff was really good and it really well done.
Yeah.
And a lot of violence.
No, it's good
and
stuff.
And sad stuff.
Yeah. It's super sad. You guys will love it. It's got Spider-Man in it.
It's great.
Yeah, no, it's great. All right, so moving on to a book we actually didn't read, but I just wanted to mention came out. This is Avatar The Last Airbender 1, The Promise by Gene Yang and Gurihiro. I didn't actually realize that Gene Yang wrote this. That's the guy who wrote American Born Chinese.
Yep, it's pretty awesome.
I didn't read this because I haven't finished watching Avatar
Me neither,
The Last actually. Airbender yeah. yet. And none of us has actually finished the series, and this takes place after.
Yeah.
So we didn't want to spoil things.
It looked good. It had great art.
Yeah, no, it looks great. I think it's going to be fantastic. And when I do catch up on Avatar, I think I've got a season left to watch. So maybe we'll come back and we'll talk about this again.
There you go. But
yep.
Now you know.
And now you know. All right. I also wanted to mention that the Brenda Starr reporter, Dailies and Sundays, 1940 to 1946 by Dale Messick came out.
We did mention Brenda Starr in the last podcast.
Yeah. So, like, again, we didn't actually read this, but because we talked about Brenda Starr, I just wanted to tell people. If you want to find out more about Brenda Starr,
now you know.
You probably still don't want to buy this because it's like $50 and there's better stuff.
There's a lot of good old strips out now.
Yeah, that's definitely true. All right, so moving on to Bulletproof Coffin Disinterred, number one by David Hein and Shaky Kane.
Yeah.
So this is a sequel to the previous Bulletproof Coffin, but sort mostly of. In theme. I mean, it's
and title.
The same characters and stuff.
Some of the characters show up, yeah. Basically, the first Bulletproof Coffin miniseries was about this guy who had memories of being a superhero, and it was mixed with, like, they would cut to actual pages from different comics that existed in this universe. And then he kind of became a superhero, and then really weird meta stuff happened. He met the creators and stuff. And this sequel is completely different. It starts off with this guy who's like a detective, and he's trying to solve this murder where this serial killer is cutting off these people's heads and replacing it with other things. And some crazy stuff happens, and that's about it. It's hard to explain without giving the whole thing away.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a mystery, but it has a crazy ending. And
it really did.
Yeah, it's basically this satanic serial killer story thing. And it's awesome.
And the heroes, actually, there's a weird segment where the hero from the last one shows up. He's like, because there's a scene where they're like digging up a grave, and in the background, like the other heroes being dug out of the grave, like in the first miniseries, he shows up. He's like, "What's going on?" And then they walk away, and I was like, "What?" That's it.
Yeah, Bulletproof Coffin though, it's cool. It's got a very weird kind of like
very weird.
I don't know, like I don't want to say Tales from the Crypt, but almost like a Tales from the Crypt kind of thing. It's definitely really reverential,
like,
to Golden Age stuff,
almost like just surreal but cool. And
Shaky Kane's got a cool art style. We talked about that.
Weird art book
thing that came out, but seeing him do actual comics, he's got a cool kind of like
down to this,
Chris Burnham style that's pretty neat. So
it's awesome.
All right, so moving on to Catwoman 1, Trail of the Catwoman, or is it Trial of the Catwoman?
Trail
of the Catwoman, softcover by Darwin Cook, Ed Brubaker, Cameron Stewart, Mike Allred, Brad Rader, and Rick Burchett.
Those guys all stink.
So this collects Selena's Big Score.
Yep.
Which was the first graphic novel that was all by Darwin Cook, I think, right? Written and drawn.
Standalone by Cook, yep.
And then it collects some backup stories featuring Slam Bradley that were in Detective Comics. And then I think after that it collects the first 9 issues of Catwoman.
Yeah. This is a big book.
It is a big book. And this was kind of DC's reimagining of Catwoman in the late 90s, I want to say.
It might have been early 2000s. It was like right after No Man's Land.
And it took Catwoman in a really... I think the best direction I think probably Catwoman's ever been taken.
And it's the creation of her like modern costume, which is still being used, I think, in the new 52 for the most part.
Yeah. It was basically Ed
when she's wearing it.
Yeah. Ed Brubaker was like, if she's a cat burglar, she'd be wearing an efficient cat burglar suit, not some sexy, ridiculous outfit.
Yeah. She doesn't have sex with Batman on the roof in this at all.
Yeah. It's really unfortunate. So this is worth it for Selena's Big Score alone.
I just reread it. And like I said, I have just read a million Parker novels, which have been turned by Darwin Cook into comic books recently, and I realized that this Selena's Big Score is written around the framework of a Parker novel where it's 4 chapters and it changes perspectives in one, and it's basically a giant heist story, and it's amazing.
Yeah,
it's one of the best crime thriller heist books I've ever read. It's just a comic book.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the characters is even named Stark, right?
Yep,
after
the pseudonym for the guy who writes the Parker novels, and it's amazing.
But this is great.
Yeah,
it's really good.
So good.
If you like Darwin Cook, you'll love it. And it's like one of the best Catwoman things that's ever existed.
Yeah, and just the first, I don't know, quarter of the book is Selena's Big Score, which is just a really great heist thing.
Good.
Just like, I don't know, it's great.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
And then it goes right into this awesome Catwoman story by Ed Brubaker, who also does great crime comics.
Yeah.
And
then some of the art's by Mike Allred. I mean, then some of the covers are by Paul Pope, and it's got tons.
It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculously good. All right, so moving on to Dance Class 1, So You Think You Can Hip Hop, hardcover, by Baca and Crip.
Yep, some good names there.
Yeah, so I thought this was kind of a cute book. This was put out by Paper Cuts, which is like NBM's children's line.
Yep.
I'm assuming these are French creators.
As far as I can tell, yeah.
And these are it's kind of little one-page stories about a dance class. I feel like it's probably aimed at, 10 to 15-year-old girls, something like that. And each page is kind of a gag strip, but then there's this overall story about the main girl falling in love with one of the dance instructors. And, it's funny and it's cute. The art's great.
The art's really good.
It's very cartoony. It kind of reminds me of, who's the Sky Doll artist?
Oh, man.
Anyway, the guy that draws Sky Doll did a series called Witch before Sky Doll, and the art reminds me a lot of that. And, I thought it was fun. You don't see a lot of books that have this kind of just
fun,
light, humorous tone. And
It's a lot about them just being friends and dealing with each other, and then like jokes about stuff, but not serious. And it's great.
Yeah, it's definitely the best book for little girls about dancing that I've read in a long time. no, but that was, yeah, I thought it was very good. All right, so moving on to Fantastic Life Softcover by Kevin Mulch. This was a Zurich Award winner from a couple years ago, and then it just came out in graphic novel form, and it was very cool.
It was so good. So basically, it's just about this guy who, it's really hard to explain. Well, it starts off with him at a party, and he gets drunk, and he's trying to like get some girl to sleep with him. And so he's walking around like, oh, maybe this girl will sleep with me. Oh, I'm going to maybe try to sound smart because this girl sounds smart. And I'm like, it's really funny.
Yeah.
And then he like kind of passes out and he wakes up in his apartment and there's like paintings on the wall that's signed by him. And he's like, I didn't draw these. What's going on? And then he's like, what's going on? I don't recognize any of these people, but everybody knows him. And then that keeps happening, and like he keeps waking up in different realities, and he's not sure like what's real and what's not, and what just happened and what didn't happen. But along the way, it's like really funny, and it's a lot about like kind of his search for identity.
Yeah, drama and art, and like, you know, what creative is, and like trying to be with the right person. But it's like Nick said, with all these weird dreams and stuff, it's kind of like these layers of reality, but also maybe drug use. And I'm pretty sure it's just lots of dreams and drugs kind of mixed together, but not in just like, whoa, things are weird, but it's like actually written in a way where you as the reader and the protagonist, you're not sure what's happening, but it's done really well.
Yeah. I mean, you were describing Bulletproof Coffin as being sort of Lynchian, David Lynch-ish.
Yes, this is much
definitely
more,
that as well.
Yeah.
In ways it reminded me a little bit of X'd Out, the Charles Burns thing.
Not the really crazy, the content, like otherworld
and X'd Out, but a lot of the sort of just the mood of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. I mean,
it's really funny.
Yeah, and yeah, it's for the type of book it is, it's actually really hilarious and well written. I don't know Kevin Mulch. I don't know if this is the first thing he's done. But it's really well executed, and I'd say he's a name to watch out for.
There you go.
Yep. Yeah. So moving on to Fatale number 2 by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. The first issue of Fatale we gushed over when it came out.
Yep.
And as far as I can tell, the quality just continues in number 2.
I went back and reread number 1 just to have the story flowing together. And it was interesting on number 2, they did the intro on the front page of like saying what happened. And it like explained more than I think I got out of number 1. It's like, based on this weird cult you ran into in World War II. I'm like, really? Where did that come from? But yeah, just the art stays amazing. It's still building up. Just buy it. I don't even want to say.
Just read it. It's because it's the second issue. Like the story's really unfolding, and we don't want to give away too much. But Fatale is already one of the best series of the year, and it's
just like layering on the awesome crime story. But the characters are so good, and it's like a really strong plot. It's really going places.
Yeah, for me, if it keeps going the way it's going, it'll be my favorite thing that Brubaker and Phillips have done together. Nice. Which is saying a lot, because they've done a lot of really good stuff. But I like it better than Sleeper.
I was about to say, Sleeper might still be up there.
Yeah, and I like it better than most of the criminal stuff. Yeah. Not to say I don't like that stuff, because
no,
I love
awesome.
That stuff. Yeah. But I think this is fantastic, and it's a book that everybody should read.
Yes.
All right, so moving on to a book that everybody should also read if they have enough money. John Romita's Amazing Spider-Man Artist Edition Hardcover by John Romita. This is... So IDW's been putting out these huge books.
Is this the third one?
This is the third. Yeah. The first one was the Dave Stevens Rocketeer book. The second one was a Walt Simonson Thor book. And what these books are like folio editions that are all shot from the original pencils and inks.
And whiteout.
Yeah, from the artist. So they're like, 10.5 by 16 or whatever.
They're huge.
They're gigantic. And this is like, I don't know, like 6 issues of Amazing Spider-Man.
I think there are 6 or 7, so around that many, yeah.
Just drawn by John Romita. You know, the stories are your basic Romita Spider-Man things, but to just see this art blown up with such amazing detail and so beautifully reproduced, it's an amazing book.
It's like you're sitting in their studio looking at them, at their finished art, and you're like...
It's got a full, like 5 or 6 issues or so?
Maybe one more,
Yeah, it's very vaguely priced. We priced it at $125.
Yeah.
The price is different everywhere, but it's definitely worth picking up if you can find it. I think we're sold out of it already. So
yes,
but it's a very cool book. All right, so moving on to Kramer's Ergo. We're going through these pretty fast.
We're trying.
This is Kramer's Ergo 8. This is a hardcover by Robert Beatty, Gabriel Bell, Chrisilla, Anya Davidson, Ron Embleton, Frederick Mullally, CF, Sammy Harkham, Tim Hensley, Kevin Huizenga, Ben Jones, Takeshi Murata, Gary Panter, Johnny Ryan, Leon Sadler, Frank Santoro, Dash Shaw, and Ian F. Savonius.
Nice.
Save the best for last.
Indeed.
So, like a lot of anthologies, I'd say this is a very mixed bag.
Yeah. I would say that, and like we've talked about this a little bit today already, after we all read it, like, I was more put off by the mixed bagness of this because there's some things in here that I just are so dislike because they're not my style. But yeah. Then talking about it with like the other things in this are so strong, this might be one of the best anthologies I've ever read.
Yeah, I mean, I will say first off, this is not as big as Kramer's Ergo 7.
Right.
Which was, what was that book, like 19 by 24 or something? It was gigantic.
Biggest comic ever.
But this is just like a basic hardcover size. But like Jared said, it's like some of the stuff is definitely stuff that maybe I like a little bit more and Nick likes a little bit more
like
than
the art house style.
Yeah, that kind of picture box Four Thunder stuff. Like Ben Jones, who I'm not a huge fan of, but like his story in here is pretty fun, I think. Yeah. The real standouts for me were the Gabrielle Bell story, which is this kind of crazy story that's takes place in a vineyard that's like a kind of murder thing, which is pretty amazing. The Kevin Huizenga story, which is a kind of a Pellucidar journey to the center of the earth type story, but in that Kevin Huizenga style.
Yeah,
so
it's fun to see him just a straight up adventure thing. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah. And the Johnny Ryan story, which is
amazing. That was definitely my favorite.
It's a sub chapter of Prison Pit or something.
Yeah, like Prison Pit times Bowman.
Yeah.
Like with weird.
It was crazy.
Yeah. I was going to say something that's in it, but I couldn't think of a way to say it. But
it's a giant Wang monster.
Yep, and a giant other thing shaped like an evil thing. And actually, the Gary Panter thing in here was a lot of fun. Yeah. It was actually some of the best art I've seen from Gary Panter, who does this is a new Jimbo story.
Yeah.
A lot of people might know Gary Panter as the set designer for Pee Wee's Playhouse.
Yeah, there you go.
He designed Cherry, and Cherry's amazing. Yeah. There's a Dash Shaw Frank Santoro thing in here that's like a weird. To Catch a Predator type story.
Oh, yeah, that was weird.
With kind of like a depressing twist at the end. And then there's like the stuff that I wasn't a huge fan of, particularly the Takeshi Murata photo stuff, montage stuff in the middle. I thought that was really weird.
Yeah, it's like pictures of like cans of Coors Light and
saxophones.
It's got a very like Matthew Barney kind of like
it's like I have a camera and I'm learning to use Photoshop.
It's that kind of like Damien Hirst stuff that I just don't, I'm not really a big fan of. But one of the most interesting things in here is the Ron Embleton, Frederick Mullally
Wicked Wanda
comics, which are like
nice
somewhere between Little Annie Fanny and what's that crazy Frank Thorne Nazi porn thing.
Iron Devil?
Yeah.
Iron Angel?
Something. Yeah. This is somewhere in between that. It's just these crazy, kind of weird Fritz the Cat.
For one, they ran in Penthouse magazine.
Yep.
And they were a competitor to try to outdo Little Annie Fanny. But this seems, it ran for like 20, I had to look it up on Wikipedia. I was like, where did this thing come from? It ran for like 20 years or something.
Jesus.
And like, I think at the end, like Bob Guccione was writing something even weird. But this seems like it was like just the intro page of various storylines.
No, because I imagine they were all like two, three page things that were in Penthouse.
But there's no flow to it. I think they just picked up the intros and like here's.
I think the fact that there's no flow to it is part of the reason why it's in here, because it's that kind of picture box, like so bad it's good.
Oh no.
It's weird. It's just like these girls that run around like running over people and assassinating people, and there's naked women with machine guns
and lots of Nazis. It's definitely that like 70s sexploitation. Like for some reason there were like Nazis in like every sex thing in the 70s.
If you like boobs, you'll like it.
That's definitely true. I mean, the art's
really good.
It is good, but then it's also like really bad in a weird way too from time to time. It's like really over rendered and like it's that kind of airbrushed like old Richard Corbin and Den style. But no, I mean it's interesting though.
Oh yeah.
And that's the most important thing, I think.
Yeah.
Also the Sammy Harkham story in here is great. The CF story is great. We could go on about Kramer's Ergo for a long time, but we can't talk about every single thing.
But a few misses, but on the whole, really impressive.
Yeah, on the whole, a great book, definitely worth checking out. All right, so moving on to the Madman 20th Anniversary Monster hardcover by Mike Allred and Various.
Crazy.
Various. There's definitely a reason we had to write Various on here.
Yeah, there's like 300 people involved.
Yeah, mostly it's pinups. I'd say three quarters of the book is probably pinups.
Yeah.
Pinups by some amazing people. I mean, it's like guys like Darwin Cook. There's a Raphael Grandpa pinup in here.
Alex Toth.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really amazing stuff. Some of it is reprints of older pinups and stuff too.
Yeah.
But, and then there are a few comics in the front. What do we say? Probably about 40 or 50 pages of comics.
Yeah.
This is a giant book though. Yeah. Is
it's
this
another huge oversized book?
The size of Wednesday comics, I'd say.
Probably, yeah.
Maybe even a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
The comics are okay. I mean, the art is really good. Some of the comics are by Darwin Cook. There's one by Paul Pope. So yeah. there's a lot of really cool stuff in it. It's just it's a really expensive book. What is it, $100?
$100.
Yeah. So if it was all comics, I would say 100% amazing, especially considering the people that are involved.
Yeah.
But all these pinups, like some of them are really badly reproduced too.
Yeah, I was really disappointed by the number of pinups in this.
Yeah.
Like, all right.
So I don't know. It's a hard one for me to recommend, which, you know, the salesman in me is like, no, you should definitely buy this book. Well, but if I'm going to be honest about it, it's like I was excited about it. And then when I looked through it, I wasn't too terribly excited about it anymore.
But it's got art from like almost anybody who ever did a comic ever.
Yeah,
that's true.
And so, you know, and it's great. It's just I don't know. I don't know if I could justify spending $100 on it.
Yeah, there you go.
Does anybody have a counter argument to that?
No.
Yeah. Argument is moving on.
Sorry. All right, moving on to the best book that ever came out, Magic the Gathering number 1 by Matt Forbeck and Martin Coccolo. This has a Magic the Gathering card in it, so flip your wig right now, people.
Yep. You could sell that crap on eBay afterwards, man.
Refresh your mana pool.
Jared's really good at following crappy fantasy stories. Jared, what is this comic about?
Well, I will say right up front that this is much better than I thought it would be. Which
I definitely agree with that.
It was not terrible because it did not have a million terrible fantasy words, although it had a lot of them in it. And it did not try to make the mechanics of the Magic game as like an integral part of the story. Instead, it's just a guy who is a thief who ends up stealing something in the very beginning, chased by a lot of dudes, and he is a planeswalker, which means he can jump dimensions, and so he is constantly escaping by going to a different place and finding himself in more trouble, which is a pretty good chase scene. I think the story was okay. You know,
the art was actually decent.
The art was cool.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed the story and the art, and there was a cool twist in it that was a cool little hook. Something I really hated about it, though, was the lettering, and the boxes were all terribly...
Yeah, there was something a little amateur about the whole presentation of the book.
There's
yeah.
some stuff that people just can't pull off. But the story was good and the twist at the end. I was like
the little thought boxes were just like this terrible blue color and it was just not good looking.
Yeah, but I think they kept the story simple enough that it was, you know, it was just like kind of a fun little read. I mean, basically what Jared just said is exactly what happened in it.
Yeah. Yep.
And
cool monsters. And
will you guys read the second issue?
I might, actually.
I might.
No.
I think that's fair. I probably will not. But I would say if you're into Magic the Gathering, which I've never really gotten into.
Play the game.
That's true. If you're in but some people are so into Magic the Gathering that they're like chomping at the bit. They're like, I want something else. Yeah. The new set doesn't come out for 2 more days.
It's true.
Which is true, right? It comes out in like a couple days.
Yeah, on Friday.
Yeah. So, anyway, it's Magic the Gathering. They said something about Innistrad in it, and I recognize that from one of the packs of cards.
I mean, the main reason to buy this if you're a Magic the Gathering fan is it comes with a free Magic the Gathering card.
Well, I don't know if it's free.
Well, yeah, you got to pay for the comic.
The best reason to buy a pack of Magic the Gathering cards is because they come with 10 free Magic the Gathering cards.
It comes with one limited edition Magic the Gathering
card. It's true. Jared, did you look at the powers of the card? Is it a good card?
I didn't actually look at it. No, I totally forgot to.
Oh.
I'll let you guys know next week.
Indeed. We'll keep you guys updated on our Magic. Just call our Magic the Gathering hotline. It's 1-800. This hotline does not exist.
I don't want to call that.
Yeah,
it's too many numbers.
It's going to be
just called 1-800 this hot. I'm pretty sure that's a good phone number.
All right. So moving on to Monkey in the Basement and Other Delusions by Karine Mucha. I'm going to say Mucha. This was another one of these retrofit books.
Yep.
Which is that's Box Brown's line, right? Yeah. And Box Brown's awesome. We love Box Brown.
We do.
He wears a bandana sometimes.
He does. Sometimes. That's true.
This was like a couple short stories. One about a monkey.
Yeah, so
in a basement.
Is this one, was it autobiographical? It seemed like it was.
It seemed like it was semi-autobiographical.
Yeah. But anyway, it's a girl who's the circus comes to town, and then she hears a weird noise in the basement and sees something, and she's like, what was that thing just running through the shadows? And of course, she's like, clearly a monkey has escaped from the circus and is now living in my basement. How do I get it to come out and be my friend? And it was amazing.
Yeah, yeah, it was fun. I mean, that's basically what it is.
Yeah, it's funny and cute.
Yeah, and it was funny and cute. It's like her trying to convince her friends that there's really a monkey in her basement. They're probably like, it's just a squirrel or whatever.
Yeah, there's nothing
down
there.
And I thought it was fun. There are a couple other stories in there that didn't grab me as much as the main story. But I definitely feel like it's worth checking out. I've been pretty happy with all this retrofit stuff so far.
And she definitely has really good art. I liked her art style.
Yeah, it's I'm trying to think of what it reminds me of. It's definitely has a style of her own. She's not like aping other artists or anything like that. It's I don't know what it reminds me of. But it's cool.
It's good.
Yeah, yeah, it's worth checking out. All right, moving on to Nancy in Hell on Earth, number one by El Torres and Enrique Lorenzana.
Nancy
was in Hell.
Yep. So that was the previous series, was Nancy in Hell.
And now she's like hooked up with Lucifer.
Yeah, the end, literally, to spoil the first one, was she hooks up with Lucifer and they escape back to Earth.
Yep.
And Lucifer's a cool dude. He's just an angel, you know?
And they come to Earth and Hell comes with them.
Yeah, so not so good.
And so I guess the main hook probably for most people in Nancy in Hell is that she wears Daisy Dukes and tight t-shirts.
And she kills demons with a chainsaw.
Yeah, she's like a totally oversexed female version of like Ash from like Evil Dead and Army of Darkness. Yeah. But
well, that's a good description.
Yeah, I actually had a lot of fun with this issue.
It was
though.
Amazing.
Yeah, the art is great.
Yeah, the art's almost got like a hyper detailed Jeff Darrow kind of look to it. Yeah. Very influenced by Juan Jose Reep, who drew the first series.
Yeah,
and it's just got like lots of giant monsters on Earth, and they're fighting them and cutting them up with chainsaws.
Yeah, it's just like very cheesecakey. I mean, even the guys are like, there's like all these hot half naked dudes.
Yeah, they definitely don't. It's definitely not just about exploiting Nancy's assets. Yeah. It's also like Lucifer's like 8-pack and stuff, and like you know, it's
ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a really silly book, but it knows what it is.
Yeah,
and I think that's the most important thing. It's not like reading tarot or like Lady Death or some crap like that.
Yeah,
it's still junk. In its, I don't know, but it's fun junk.
It's like watching a B movie that's done really well.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this is fun, but stupid, but it's amazing.
It's like watching a B movie where people definitely know what they're doing,
right?
And don't think they're making art or something
like
or high
Dead.
Art. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So, you know, if that sounds interesting to you, you're probably really going to like this.
Yeah, you should definitely check it out.
All right, so moving on to a book that I think we have a little bit of mixed feelings about, which is unfortunate because I thought we were all going to just love this book. But this is Polly and the Pirates 2.
Yep.
Mystery of the Dragonfish, written by Ted Naifa.
Yeah.
But with art by Robbie Rodriguez.
Yeah, so the first one came out a million years ago and said one on the spine, and we were never sure we were going to see a second volume, and that was Ted Naifa writing and drawing it. So this one came out, and Robbie Rodriguez apes Ted Naifa's style in a pretty interesting way, that it seems similar, but then it's his own take on it. So at first you're like, oh cool, I'm reading a new, you know, Polly and the Pirates comic, and then you're like, wait a minute. So I don't know, like Nick, you describe it as kind of like he's very thin lines.
I read them back to back today, so I read the first one and I really liked the first one, and it's got really cool art, really cartoony. And then the second one, I felt it was really confusing as to who was what and what was going on, because everybody looked kind of different. It looked like
it's a year later.
It looked like for the first half of the book, the book was intended to be in color,
because
there's very little like shading, and like the line work is really thin. Like it looks like it was supposed to be colored later on, and then later near the end, it gets darker and there's more shading and stuff.
And that part is a lot better, I feel especially art wise.
Interesting.
And the story gets better towards the end too. One thing I felt in the first one, I felt like the storytelling was really clear, and it was like a very not straightforward adventure, but it was an adventure that had a lot of personality, but was really easy to follow. I found the second one to be actually kind of confusing.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because I couldn't tell who some of the characters were, or maybe didn't remember some of their, you know, motivation and stuff like that.
Yeah. I read it back to back and it was still confusing. Oh, I was like, who's this guy? What's happening?
Well, for anyone who hasn't read it, Polly and the Pirates is basically this girl in, 18th century, 19th century?
Yeah, it's 19th century.
Say 19th century. her dad puts her up in like a boarding school because he's so busy doing other stuff, and she never knows who her mother was. And it turns out that her mother was the queen of the pirates, and that there is in fact a pirate ship out there crewed by kind of monstrous dudes. And she has now been chosen to inherit her mother's mantle and become the new queen of the pirates. So.
The first story covers all that, which is why the first story works.
It's
a
crazy
so well.
Good adventure of this young girl going on this awesome thing. And the second one is much more. There's a character based on the Emperor Norton from San Francisco, this crazy dude who thought he was Emperor of the United States of America, and he gets involved in a crazy conspiracy by, was it the villains from the first one, or is it a new guy?
No, it's new villains.
Yeah. New villains who have some sort of secret weapon, which is what the weapon is a big twist, and then, but like you said, it's like she brings along her friends from the boarding school, or one of her friends from the boarding school this time, so you've got two very similar girls, like in appearance, getting mixed up in this stuff, and then like a bunch of like the boarding house mother, or I don't know.
Yeah, it's
like
weird.
A
that's,
lot of characters.
That's
that
the thing. They
really important.
They use a lot more characters, and I feel like they add a lot more complication to the story. Yeah. And I feel like you just feel less invested in it. I feel like it's not even really about Polly,
right?
And the first book was very much about her, and this is kind of about all the stuff going on in this world more.
Yeah.
And I don't know. For me, it was like the difference between. Let's blow up the Death Star, or let's find out about this Trade Federation blockade. You know, it's just like, it's once you add all that kind of political stuff on top of it, it didn't fit with the kind of adventure story that I wanted to read.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say that it's bad.
No, that's the thing.
It's weird because
it's good, but
it also left like a lot, like the first, like I read them back to back, and the first one like has a lot of build up, and then there's like kind of like a twist at the end where you see the Pirate King, and he's like, I'm going to get that girl. And then he's not even in this book. It's like,
I forgot about that. That's
I haven't read the first book since it came out.
It was weird. Like there was like some stuff left open at the end where it was like, oh, that's going to be covered in the next book. Yeah. And also the first book ends with her getting on an airship with her dad and flying away. And he's like, let me tell you about your mother. And then, he's never mentioned, like, well, he's kind of mentioned in the second book, but he's
not there telling her about her mother, which is like kind of what
it's like a year later. And
it's just weird. And all that being said, it is good.
Yeah. The first one is great. Like, if you haven't read it, I really, really highly recommend it.
And it's just when you compare it to the first book, which you have to read, I feel like, to read this second book. Yeah. It's not something you can just jump in and read on its own, which is unfortunate.
But you'd be confused.
Yeah. Cause this isn't the kind of book that you want to have be a book that you can't read on its own.
Yeah.
But when you compare it to the first book, which you kind of have to, it's just not up to that level of quality, which is unfortunate because I love the first book, and I still thought this book was good, but like I don't know, it was a disappointment.
Yeah,
which is, I hate to say that, but it's true. I'm gonna cry.
I wish Ted Neffe had drawn it.
I wish he had two. He only had 5 years though. All right, so moving on to the Ratcatcher softcover by Andy Diggle and Victor Ibanez.
Didn't we already talk about this? I think we reviewed.
We might have talked
cover.
About it again, but I put it on the list again because it's so good.
Jared definitely wants to talk about this. Jared, just for people who are new listeners,
make it snappy.
So the rumor is the rat catcher is, if you're in the mob and you rat out your fellow crooks, the rat catcher will track you down no matter where you are, whether you're witness relocation, whether you run away, and kill you.
He's the boogeyman for snitches.
Yep. And so this book is
snitches
like,
get stitches.
The double cross of double crosses. Word. And it reads like one of the best crime movies you've ever seen. It's just amazing. Cool. You should buy it.
Wow, you really did make that snappy.
You said snappy.
It's true. Rat catcher is great.
Yeah.
It's great.
Buy it.
Yeah.
Now.
Yep.
We're not open right now.
Tomorrow.
Unless we are, depending on when you're listening,
to this.
All right. So moving on to Red Skull Incarnate softcover by Greg Pak and Mirko Kolak. This is kind of the spiritual predecessor to Magneto, not
Successor.
A hero. Huh?
Successor?
No, this came out first.
What?
It's a predecessor.
He's
came out first.
In timeline wise, when it takes place.
I'm talking about when it was published. This came out before Magneto, not a hero.
No,
it didn't.
Came out like last
a few
year.
Months ago. Yeah.
Didn't it? Yeah. Oh, I'm thinking Magneto Testament.
Eh.
I'm getting them mixed up. Never mind.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is the spiritual something sister.
Successor to Magneto Testament.
It is the successor, not the predecessor. All right. Anyway, Nick, why don't you tell people what this stupid comic's about?
No, this comic is great.
It is great.
It's much like the Magneto Testament. Magneto Testament was about Magneto being in concentration camp and really had nothing to do with his magnetic power. Well, they showed up a little bit, but it was just about him. And this is very much like that. It's about the Red Skull as a little kid, and it's about him kind of going from being this semi-innocent kid in a orphanage to being this evil Nazi. And it's really good. It's really well done, and the build up's really good, and it's awesome. It's not, there's no appearance by the Red Skull. He doesn't become the Red Skull, but it's very much his origin.
Like, yeah, it's like the character origin story, not like the evil superpowers origin story.
In the last issue, he doesn't put on his mask and go no.
Yeah,
This is like it's really well executed. It's actually kind of. I mean, obviously, it's a dark book because it's about the birth of evil.
Yeah.
But it's like. Just reading it, it's got a very oppressive atmosphere to it, but intentionally. I feel like it's it was really well done.
It's very well researched too. There's a lot of little annotations in the back.
Yeah, and there's some stuff in the back that kind of gets into his research. Right. It's cool. I mean, I guess it's his real origin of the Marvel Universe Red Skull,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
No, it's a cool book. It's really dark. Especially like some of the stuff he does when he's a little kid. There's sort of all these almost like early serial killer warning sign things going on that are pretty messed up. But it's definitely worth a read. It's got a feel of its own, and I like it when they do these kind of non superhero things in the superhero universes, and that's what this is, and it's cool.
That's awesome.
Moving on to a very superhero-y thing in a superhero universe, Secret Avengers 21.1 by Rick Remender. And who's going to be the new Secret Avengers writer? He's of course great and writes Uncanny X-Force and other stuff.
Venom,
Fear Agent.
Yeah, Venom's all.
Sea of Red.
Yeah.
Other stuff. And drawn by Patrick Zercher, who probably a lot of people don't know, but he drew the first of the Terror Incorporated miniseries that came out a couple years ago, which was absolutely great.
Some of the greatest art.
But Secret Avengers 21.1 is kind of introducing the new team. And it's a very cool story. It's Captain America and Hawkeye kind of infiltrating this party. I don't know.
Yeah, it's basically Captain America trying to recruit Hawkeye to run the Secret Avengers by taking him on this mission. And it's a really good done-in-one story. If you like the Warren Ellis stuff, this actually kind of fits in really well with that. It's a really good done-in-one story that's, it's got really cool twists and it's... There's a lot of character stuff, and the interactions between Hawkeye and Captain America are really good. Like, you get a sense of their history and their contrasting viewpoints on stuff. And it's pretty cool. I mean, it's a really simple story. It doesn't actually introduce a lot of the other Secret Avengers. It's pretty much just the Cap and Hawkeye.
Yeah, it's just like a standalone espionage story that's kind of the framework for Captain America and Hawkeye to have this conversation about Hawkeye leading the Secret Avengers.
The story does tie into stuff that happened in Secret Avengers like for the first like 12 issues or so.
Yeah. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun, and it's got great art. All right, so moving on to The Silence of Our Friends by Mark Long, Jim DeMonacos, and Nate Powell. This is a really, really good book.
Yeah. So good. This is probably the best thing that was on this list.
Yeah, this is a book that takes place in the 60s. Sort of the height of the Black Power movement and the Civil Rights movement. And it's about a television reporter who befriends a leader in the the Student Nonviolent
Action Committee,
SNCC.
Yeah,
not to be confused with SNCC, which is the Wolverine organization. It's just about kind of, it's kind of hard to explain, but a lot of stuff happens in this. Basically, it's about the reporters who's a white guy, his family sort of befriending this other guy's family who's like a leader like the Black Power movement, and kind of the politics of friendship and stuff during that time period and how people react to it and kind of figuring out who your friends are, mixed with this bigger overall story of how the movement is moving along and then sort of taking a big turn into this riot where a police officer is killed.
Yeah.
And
it's all based on true stuff.
Yeah, all based on true stuff, and how this kind of monumental court decision came to fruition because of their friendship. It's really interesting. I don't know if I'm explaining it well.
No, it's fascinating. It's like, for one, it's set in Texas, which you don't typically think of as like a center of any of the civil rights stuff, because so much is like, Mississippi or Alabama or whatever. But the town this is set in has a black college on one end, and then like the other end of town is like literally down the street is like kind of like one of the flashpoints of a lot of like race baiting and other stuff. So it's like in a very small area, you have two sides, the two opposite sides of this kind of shoved together. And so it's just just everything comes together with, but like you said, it's based on a true story. So I think the writers, like,
this, I think much like Green River Killer, I think it's actually written by the son of the reporter.
Yeah, his dad was a reporter. Yeah, something like that. So very, you know, very, I don't know, just truthful feeling and very intense and great characters. And
but at the core of the story is really the friendship between these two guys and how conflicted they are about it, because they know that, you know, it's the right thing for them to be friends. But everything around them and everybody around them is telling them that, you know, it's just not possible.
And that it will cause trouble for them in whatever they're trying to do if they do have these people as friends.
And the great thing about it is the fact that they're friends is what ends up being the kind of catalyst for all the good things that end up happening towards the end of the book. It's great. I think for me, I mean, it's pretty early in the year, but this is going to be end up being one of the best graphic novels this year.
And if you're into like civil rights history, it's a pretty cool little segment, little turning point.
Yeah, stuff that I'd never heard of. It's fascinating.
And I found the end of the book very emotional for me. Like I was getting a little choked up when I was reading. I mean, it's really well done, really well executed. I think probably the best thing Nate Powell's ever done, and he's an artist that I really love. Yeah, but
really good on
Working with some really quality writers, he just did a really good job.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to some superhero sci-fi books. Strike Force Mortuary.
I did not read this.
No, I should say definitely check out Silence of Our Friends because it's great. Yeah. But Strike Force Mortuary, Jared.
What was the one you were talking about, like superheroes in the superhero universe right before this? This is like superhero-ish in a sci-fi universe. And
let me say this is written by Peter B. Gillis with art by Brent Anderson and Wills Portacio.
Yes, right there you go. Wills Portacio. Some good artists.
Wills Portacio.
Is this the 90s? The 80s?
This came out in 1986.
86. So there you go. Right when Watchmen was coming out, this was the counterattack. No, it wasn't. It's one of those things that if you just read the concept, it's a really cool idea, which is in the future, aliens have come to Earth and basically are so technologically superior, they are just raiding Earth for fun and to torture people and to murder people and to steal stuff and just like incomprehensible things. And Earth just cannot really fight back until they come up with a crazy formula that will allow people to basically get superpowers to help them fight back. Except the caveat is anyone who takes this power will die in a year or less.
Yeah, so in that way, it's very similar to Thunder Agents, which was an earlier series by Wally Wood. But the sci-fi element makes it pretty interesting. One of the things I found most interesting was the main character and sort of his relationship with his parents.
Yeah.
And like they don't want him to go into this war, but he's like inspired by comics. And the whole thing is like kind of cheesy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like a lot of fun to read.
Yeah.
It looks awesome. I didn't get a chance to read any of it.
No, they have stuff like, you know, like they take him to the first time to the school where they're going to train him and see if he can accept the powers well enough to, you know, to be part of the program. And then like some things fly over in the sky and they suddenly, like the little line is like, Earth has not controlled the skies for 5 years or something. And they all run into the building scared they're going to get killed. You know, it's little bits like that that made it really cool. My problem with it was that it still did have a little bit too much of that super-powered thing on it. Not super-powered, but superheroes. You know, when they do get accepted in the program, they all have code names and, like, uniforms. And, you know, if it was, like, Maverick or something from Top Gun, it'd be one thing. But they all have
like
costumes.
Right, like the dude, what's his name, RB? Rabbit Beaver. So it's, like, that kind of stuff. It's very 80s, like, But there's something about it, too, that just
really fun.
Kind of sets it apart from some of the other stuff that was coming out at the same time. I'd put it in the same class of, like, the original Mark Gruenwald Squadron Supreme stuff or, like, you know, just some of the more interesting
stuff.
It's
weird. It looks so awesome, but I'd never heard about it.
I've never heard of it before.
Oh, I've heard of it.
It looks awesome. And the thing is,
I've never read it, though.
This is volume one. Apparently, there's more of this.
And this is, what, 11 issues?
13 issues.
13 issues?
Yeah.
How many issues was this?
I'm assuming it was more than 13.
Yeah. The thing I felt about this is if it had taking out the superhero stuff, this would have been a successful Vertigo series.
It's a Marvel comic from 1986.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it is what it is, but then at the same time, it definitely rises above some of those tropes and becomes something just more fun and interesting to read than it really should be.
They should bring this back as a Max title. It'd be great.
It would.
Yeah. Maybe. Whatever. Or you should just read this.
Yeah.
And then maybe you won't want any more Strike Force Mortuary. Maybe you'll be like, I got enough.
I got enough.
No, but it's definitely cool. I mean, I don't know.
It's got dark elements to it. It does. Some interesting stuff.
That's why I think it reminded me a lot of the Squadron Supreme series from that time period, which was a really dark book, but didn't go like Watchmen dark. It was still like a Marvel book that just had really messed up stuff in it. But anyway, that's Strike Force Mortuary.
All right.
My brain is turning into scrambled eggs, man. And we've talked about so many comics. I was trying to talk about Silence of Our Friends, and I was like, it's great. It's got a monkey in a basement that's at a dance class. That guy's got a fantastic life in his bulletproof coffin. All right, so moving on to Winter Soldier number one. This is by Ed Brubaker and Butch Guice.
Butch.
Yeah, so this is a spinoff, of course, of Captain America.
Captain America and Bucky.
Yeah, so after Fear Itself, everybody thinks Bucky's dead, but he's alive, and he's doing Winter Soldier-y-type things. Not assassinating people, but he's like he's Winter Soldier, and he's like doing undercover missions, so nobody knows. And the whole point of this is like the beginning, they're talking about how like the Cold War was just fought between like individuals. Like the idea that one person could take out a whole army using espionage and stuff. And it's cool. The main story of this is like there may be more Winter Soldier type guys out there, and Winter Soldier Bucky or whatever, and Black Widow are trying to find the other ones, and there's somebody is collecting them and planning to do something with them. You're not sure. Well, you kind of find out at the end. I don't want to tell anybody that, but. Yeah,
do you not want to tell anybody that? I'm going to tell people. It's the Red Ghost, and he's trying to assassinate Dr. Doom.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to tell people because that's what makes this awesome.
Yeah. Well, it's also like the ex-Latverian like ambassador or something that I think was one of the people Winter Soldier killed or something like that.
Yeah.
Because like when Bucky came back as the Winter Soldier, everyone thought it was going to be terrible, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was just like, he's been secretly, you know, frozen and working for the Soviets for 60 years. Yeah. All right, he's back. Yeah. And this is finally when they go, well, if you think about it, that's kind of crazy. And they start looking at it that, you know, he was occasionally training other people to be assassins or to. That, I thought that was the best thing. It's like they had the things like, I remember waking up and training people how to act American so they could be secret spies in America. And I'm like, yeah, you did some bad stuff, kid.
Yeah, Brubaker has a like a sort of. I want to say like a pattern that he uses in his Captain America stories that kind of translates to this really well. And that is that he tells really great, like modern stories that also tie back to stories that are like parallel stories that are going on like in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's going to be doing that with Winter Soldier as well. And he always knocks that out of the park. Yeah. I mean, he's done it with like the like 50s commie Captain America, and then he was doing it with the Captain America and Bucky stuff and relating that to the main Captain America series. And I mean Brubaker is really good at writing Captain America.
It's weird because this is like really good like character stuff, and the story is really dark and mysterious, and there's cool espionage stuff, and there's like a little bit of humor in it that's pretty good. And then,
but it also has assassin apes.
Yeah, and then a gorilla with a machine gun.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is great. It's
amazing
when you can pull that off and not, you know, make people groan.
Yeah,
it's great. It's great. And he pulls it off and makes me go, oh, my God, this is awesome.
Makes you go,
Yeah, it's one of those things that makes you go, So, Winter Soldier number one's fantastic. I would say the only thing is if you haven't been reading Captain America, just go back and read at least Winter Soldier before you pick this up.
Yeah.
Because it definitely ties into everything that's been going on in Captain America for the last 7 years now.
You could probably just jump into it. I don't know.
You could, but
don't.
You'll get more out of it. Yeah.
I mean, just start at the beginning.
And Butch Guice's art off the chain.
Fantastic. Yeah. I thought this was by Mitch Brett.
Oh, was it?
But it says Butch Guice on here. So
that might be me getting it wrong.
Yeah. So it's one of those two guys. Anyway, the art's great. It's got a kind of Gabriel Hardman style, and it's very cool. Yeah. Moving on to a book that I know Nick wants to talk about, and this is our final book of the week, of the last 2 weeks.
Yep.
Yeah, sorry if this has just been like information overload this week, but
it's 2 weeks worth of podcast.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of stuff to talk about. This is You Are a Cat! Exclamation point.
Yes.
Colon Pick a Plot softcover by Sherwin.
That's how they spelled his name.
There's a J after this T. I'm just gonna
say
a Y. I'm gonna say Gia.
Yeah.
Gia.
Tia.
This is the first non-comic book that I've read in a long time.
Yeah,
it's so sad.
It's pretty sad.
And it has pictures in it.
Yeah, but it's basically a adult version of Choose Your Own Adventure where you are a cat. And it's a lot more adult than I originally thought it was going to be, because it's basically like, you see this other cat. Do you want to have sex with it? And you're like, wait, what? And it's like, go investigate what's happening in this house. And you're like, oh my God. You know, and it gets really messed up and weird. But it's got a really good sense of humor. But it's written really well and very descriptive. And It looks like there's a whole other path that I didn't take leads to like a lot of other story stuff, but I took this one path. Basically, let me tell you my adventure. Basically, right. I woke up as a cat, chased a squirrel, went to visit my girlfriend, fought a tomcat, had sex with some random street cat, went back to the house, visited all the people in the house. The dad took me for a walk. The little boy was playing video games. The mom was doing something really naughty, and the daughter was drinking and trying to hang herself. And then, as the cat, the choice was like, "Do you want to stay with the girl who's like hanging from a belt in her closet, or do you want to like take a nap?" I was like, "I guess I'll stay with the girl." But I looked at both choices afterwards.
Okay.
So I picked the one like stay with the girl, and it was like, oh well, you stay there and you start meowing, and the dad comes in and like pulls her down and saves her, and she goes into like treatment, and then you live happily ever after. Another one, the other choice was like she dies and her dad finds her and starts moaning, and it was really bad.
So it's just a lot like the G.I. Joe Choose Your Own Adventure book that I bought at the yard sale a few weeks ago.
yeah. The most amazing thing about this book is that there's ads for a bunch of other ones in the back that I think might actually be real.
No, I don't think they're real.
I'm pretty sure they're real.
Nope.
Yeah.
Well, they haven't offered them to us to buy
yet. At least not yet.
They're too awesome to be real.
Yeah. I mean, there's ones like, you are Jesus Christ. You are homeless.
You are obsessed with Johnny Depp.
Yeah. You have been sent back in time to kill baby Hitler.
Yep. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you like Choose Your Own Adventure books and you're a big old weirdo like Nick, you should definitely check out You Are a Cat.
It's so good.
Yeah. It is definitely good. Yeah. It's insane. All right. So that's it. That's all the Woo-hoo. Books. That's every book that ever came out.
God, finally.
Finally.
But just think, you got double the whammy for your money this week.
Yeah, you got two whammies, which is a bad thing if you're playing Press Your Luck.
No, whoops.
All right, so we'll be back next week for a regular amount of comic books to review and some other stuff.
Hopefully.
And so like I said, my computer crashed, so I don't have any of my music except the music that we used for the video game podcast yesterday. So let's say goodbye with a little Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time music. What do you guys think?
Do it.
All right, let's do it. All right, we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Big Apple. 3 a.m.